So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Charlene Lowe.
You sound unsure of that.
Hey, what? I was like, review? No!
No!
Anyway.
Hello, folks. Thank you for joining us. This is our very special episode where we talk about our holiday gift guides happening over at Engadget.com. Well-timed, because we are a week before Black Friday. I feel like people are starting to think about Christmas gifts in earnest now. So we'll be diving into some of that with our senior commerce editor. We've got some news going on and some gadgets to dive into as well. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com if you've got any questions or concerns. We also typically do a live stream Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. Join us for that. It's a fun time. We've got a good crowd. Sometimes we show off gadgets, and we usually have time for Q&A, and it's a ton of fun. So we've got a lot of holiday gift guides going on at Engadget. And joining us to talk about all this is Senior Commerce Editor Valentina Palladino. What's up, Valentina?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Hello. Thank you for joining us. I know you're super busy because you're in the middle of crazy times, right?
Yes, this is the busiest time of year for, honestly, like anybody who covers gadgets. You know, you guys have been very busy too. But yeah, I mean, 1 week before Thanksgiving and just kind of deals and sales all over the place. But also, like you said, Dev, our holiday gift guide is in full swing.
There's a good question already right off the bat in our chat on the YouTube live stream. CF542 says, I'd like to know what your take on Black Friday is. Do you think there will be lots of good deals or just meh? Like, what's the outlook for this year? Because you're already knee deep looking through some of the deals, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we're already starting to see some pretty good deals, even just this morning, like when we're recording this. There have been a ton of good deals going up already. I mean, it is officially 1 week before Thanksgiving here in the US. So that's kind of a dog whistle there. But I mean, we've seen over the past couple of years, sales and deals going live even earlier than Black Friday. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, pretty much once Halloween ends, that's when people really, like merchants and retailers, really start going heavy on the deals. So yeah, I think we're going to see some pretty good deals on Black Friday. We're already starting to see some good deals. So I think now, like a couple of years, like the past two-ish years, I'd say, good time to start buying things early if you see a good deal. That's something that fits within your budget. You know, I always recommend shopping early when you do see a good deal, but there are always surprises on Black Friday, always surprises on Cyber Monday.
I do feel like Black Friday has expanded itself from being kind of the one shopping day. Then it moved over to Cyber Monday. We were just making up all these things. But now everybody's doing like pre-Black Friday sales too, which are basically the same deal and just as good, right?
So... Mm-hmm. So yeah, so Jonathan Tran in the chat again also says, has Black Friday just been Black November?
Yeah, basically.
That's very true.
It feels like it.
I would say that's 100% true. I mean, Black November, I guess, if you want to call it that. I mean, just deals and sales November. It's the entire month essentially now.
And I would point out that 11/11 is actually a bigger deal in Asia than it is here, but it's a huge like day of sales too. In China, it's called Singles Day.
It
started a few years ago. Yeah, and that's a huge, like Alibaba and Taobao and all of those Chinese.
Yeah, wasn't that basically Alibaba's created holiday? Just like, let's
yes,
let's make
they
a
created
thing.
A holiday.
Interesting.
Exactly.
I didn't know
like
that.
11/11. Yeah. And so because of that, I personally bought a bunch of stuff using 11/11 deals, and it's actually spread out to like more Western brands too. So to that point, yeah, absolutely. It feels like Black November, right? Like it's more. And then throw in what Devendra was saying about the pre-Black Friday deals, like early access. I'm like, do I want to buy these Black Friday deals? Like now, so now you're saying, Valentine, now is an okay time to buy, right? I don't have to wait till Black Friday to spend my money.
Yeah, I would say now is a pretty decent time to buy. I would even say like the longer you can wait, the longer you feel like you can wait getting closer to Black Friday, the more likelihood you are where you'll kind of see those surprise deals, you know, the kind of things that are maybe one day only on Black Friday or maybe go Black Friday into Cyber Monday. Because there are always some of those deals, right? Like there's always certain things that are like retailers will save for the day of. But I think the majority of things are starting to go on sale now. certainly next week, like the week of Thanksgiving in the US, I mean, a lot of things are just going to be, are probably going to be on sale, like starting early next week through Cyber Monday. That's just a trend that we've been seeing for the past couple of years.
We have a whole bunch of guides out there written by a bunch of folks on staff, including you, Valentina. So, you know, we do a bunch of things in Engadget, and I don't think people quite realize like the extent of what it is. We do our coverage, we do our reporting, we do reviews, we do this podcast, and we also do a lot of like service journalism in the form of these guides. And honestly, I love having time to take a step back and be like, okay, what are the ones I would actually recommend to people? So I did the computer and tablet guide, the laptop and tablet guide. We've got a bunch of things out there. Can you give us like the broad overview of what's going on this year, Valentina, and what sorts of guides people can find?
Sure. Yeah. So our holiday gift guide this year, I believe we have over 25 individual stories. So 25 individual guides all under our kind of holiday gift guide umbrella. And yeah, like you said, Dev, we cover, I think, kind of all the bases and more. Certainly all of the kind of standard gadgety things that you could think of, like laptops, tablets, streaming devices, home entertainment, things like TVs, even stuff for gamers and game streamers. There are gift ideas for all of the kind of traditional, or just what we think of as Engadget fans, right? And just the more tech savvy among us. But we also have a lot of gift guides this year for just kind of our like interests on staff, right? So we have a whole guide for home cooks in your life. So people who like to spend time in the kitchen, like to cook all the time. We also have a board game roundup that we've actually done for the past couple of years, which is one of my favorites because, you know, we don't cover board games necessarily all the time on Engadget, but we do have people on staff who are really into board games. And there are a lot of really interesting recommendations in there that, you know, I certainly wasn't aware of. Like half of the board games in our guide this year, I didn't even know existed. And I really want to pick them up because I am kind of a homebody and I would like to get into more interesting board games, you know, not your standard stuff. And then we also have a new guide all to gifts for people who love space. So NASA, anything space related, lots of fun ideas in there. And I think kind of off the wall sort of ideas. There's some clothing, there's some shoes, even jewelry and like these really cool, one of my favorite things in all the gift guides, it's these bookends that are like kind of like have little astronauts and like the moon on either side. They're so cute. I'm not a huge space nerd, but like I kind of want them for myself. we also have things like our tech toys for kids. So if you have kids or if you have nieces and nephews or just younger children in your life, like there's a bunch of techie things in there that are not like your traditional, just like give them a tablet and be done with it. You know what I mean? Like the fun things that are also interactive that adults can get involved with. And then, you know, budget friendly guides as well. We have an under 50 tech gift guide in there. We will have, because we still have some guides that haven't even come out yet, we will have like a kind of roundup of everything in our gift guides, all the stories, that's under $100. So that's really good if you're sticking to a strict budget this year.
I'd like to shout out mine that's not up yet, I don't believe.
Not yet.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
Well, obviously mine. It's going to be the gift guide for fitness lovers, which very in line with like my thing this year. And Valentina knows this, that in the edit process, I tried to squeeze too many products. And I was like, one whole paragraph on everything I want you all to know that I know about. And then I couldn't really like, you know, write into it. So like there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that y'all don't see. But that doesn't mean like we aren't aware of the ton of stuff that's out there that we didn't include on our list. We are.
Yeah.
It's just that like, you know, the ones that we do end up recommending are the ones we've tried, we've tested, we have real experience with, and we can recommend. And then the other stuff that like might have like been mentioned that we ended up cutting is the stuff that like, you know, maybe we don't think is as good a buy for everyone or like as big of a group of people. And, you know, maybe slightly outside of our core expertise as like tech reviewers. But in this case, you know, we had to leave it out.
Yeah. So. And I will say that we have in across all of the gift guides, I believe there's over 250 recommendations, like individual product recommendations. So there's a ton of stuff in there. And like you said, Cher, almost all of it is just stuff that we've had firsthand experience with, things that we've reviewed very highly, things that we've gone hands-on with, the things that we bought ourselves. That's a big, big portion of this. So there's a ton of recommendations in there already. So yeah, we had to do some editing. You know, we are in the business of editing a little bit, you know.
It's worth bringing up like some general ideas. I feel like every year when we do this, because we've talked about our gift guides for a couple of years now, maybe not everybody are as seasoned deal hunters as some of us on staff, because I used to live for deals in sites like bensbargains.net and Slick Deals, and I still do when I'm looking for things. I feel like Slick Deals is still a good source for a lot of things. So check out our guides, but also for general usage folks, like, do you have any tips, Valentina? If like you have a specific product you want to find, you're waiting for it to like get to a good price, do you set up search alerts? What are your tactics? Because for me, it's always a Slick Deal search, and I will usually get an email or sometimes a ping from their app when like a store has it for a certain price, you know?
Yeah, no, I think all of those recommendations are really good ones. I'm a very hands-on, like, manual type of person, so I will just, like...
You will just sit there and refresh?
Yeah, like, I just search, you know, every single day to see what's new for the things that I personally want, but also, you know, for Engadget to make sure that we're covering all of the latest deals all the time. But yeah, I would say, you know, going on a site like Slick Deals is a good idea. Setting up alerts, or looking at, excuse me, price history kind of trackers like Camel, that's a good resource just so you can if something is actually a good deal. And I mean, around this time of the year, usually the sales that you're going to see are either all-time low prices or very close to them. I think with inflation, there's a chance that you might see things not go down as dramatically as they have in the past, maybe last Black Friday, but the deals are still going to be the best deals that you can find throughout the year, honestly. So yeah, I would say just use a price history tracker if you have something very specific that you want to get and you just want to get the best deal on it and you're willing to wait until it drops. And then yeah, sites like Slick Deals are a good one. We cover as many deals as possible in the tech space as we can at Engadget. So always check back on Engadget.com for our coverage. We also have our Deals Twitter account, which we'll share out all of our deal stories. And we have a newsletter too, our Deals newsletter. We'll deliver like some of the top ones that we find directly to your inbox too. So
I'm so curious because you said you're such a manual person, Valentine. Do you have like your own personal spreadsheet where you're like tracking every product's prices and like whenever there's a new all-time low, you're like, yes, update, like in there?
Not exactly. I haven't gone that far down the rabbit hole yet. Because I feel like that's like just what I would be doing all the time. Like I wouldn't have time for anything else during the day. But I have something similar to what you're talking about, just especially for like our coverage at Engadget, just so I know kind of what should we be focusing on and the kind of the products certainly that we like and that we've rated highly, that we've used personally, what should I be looking out for, number one? And then also like for my job, especially like once you've seen these things go on sale so many times, you can kind of immediately recognize when something is a really good deal and when it's not. You kind of get familiar with the prices. So that's whether it's a pro or a con, I kind of just have this bank of price.
You have the touch. You're an instant like deal machine at this point.
I mean, in other words, you're the expert. That's why I go to like Valentina, because people ask me, right, for like shopping advice this holiday. So a lot of people are like looking for Apple products. Someone wants to know when they can get an iPhone, an iPad. And so like Valentina can attest to this. I've been texting her this past few weeks like, hey, so where can my neighbor get the like best deals on iPad this year? And she's like, oh, you know, your first bet is this place and that place. And then another one of my neighbors was looking for a new iPhone, so they're going with their carrier because their carrier is doing some sort of like free deal. But I see also in the chat that like Jonathan Tran asks, is Camel better than Honey? And in my understanding, and I think Devendra, you had an answer, but I don't know if it's the same thing we're talking about. To my understanding, Camel is like a price tracker.
It's a search engine type deal.
Honey is a coupon applier.
Yeah.
Honey applies coupons.
I think it may also do like price comparisons, but what I don't like about Honey, that is an extension, right? So those things,
right? It's a browser extension.
The things that live in your browser, they're definitely tracking a lot of information from you, and some people are cool with it if you're saving money or not. I just need a price tracking search engine. That's all I want. So that's why Camel's better for me. Yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, and speaking of that, by the way, this is something that I saw yesterday that was under embargo until this morning that I wanted to sort of talk about in other news, but is relevant now. So we might as well talk about it now. So Google this morning, as of this morning of this recording, announced that they're updating some of their, you know, shopping interface. So in addition to seeing just like, you know, stores that have the products that you want and how much they cost, they'll also show you things like how they compare within a chart to other places that sell the same product. And right. And you know how like when you search for like flights and stuff, they have the historical, like, oh, prices are typically this much for your flight, right? They'll bring that same sort of legend to shopping results now. So this is rolling out on either today or Monday. So hopefully in time for the shopping season, you'll see more helpful Google search results when you're shopping.
Oh man, that shop interface has been so bad for so long. So okay, make it more useful.
It's been a mess.
It's been a huge mess. I do want to point out, like, this is a weird year where some devices have actually gotten more expensive compared to last year. So we've written about the Oculus Quest 2, which was one of our recommended VR headsets last year, got more expensive this year. The PS5, Sony has raised prices in many countries, I believe not in the US, but, you know, it's rough out there because of the people preparing for an oncoming like financial crisis. So it is tough. Take what deals you can. I do feel like, Valentina, are there any specific things you kind of want to mention? What are some of your favorite gadgets that we've talked about so far, recommended in the guides?
I always like to mention kind of our budget friendly guides, just because, you know, the tech space, like you said, Dev, it's getting more expensive, especially for the brand new products. But you don't have to kind of spend an arm and a leg to get a good tech gift, you know, whether it is for someone who is very tech savvy or someone who, you know, isn't as tech savvy. Like, you can find something that's pretty useful and fun for people, but be it under $50 or under $100. In our under 50 guide, I think we have a bunch of great recommendations. One of them that, I mean, it has been kind of a mainstay in this guide for a while is the Chromecast with Google TV. I think that's a fantastic gift, especially now that they have two options, right? Like, we love the 4K model, and it's usually $50. I'm pretty sure we've seen it drop to 40. I think it actually might be on sale right now for $40 in some places. But now they have the HD Chromecast with Google TV. So if you're willing, if you want to spend even less, you can get that for, I think it goes for 30. So I think that that's a fantastic gift, you know?
Or if the TV that the person you're buying for isn't so good, you know? You can save some money, yeah.
If they use a lot of Google devices, or maybe they have one of the Google smart displays, or they use the Assistant a lot, you know, the Chromecast is compatible with Google Assistant. So it can fit into a lot of people's lifestyles, whether they are heavy Google or not. There's also some, you know, really handy kind of smaller power banks you can get for under $50. Anker makes some great ones. You can just kind of throw in your backpack, and you have like at least half of like a phone battery charge, like, for you. Those I think are always really good stocking stuffers.
I just want to point out, it's good to buy from a trusted brand like Anker as a gift, because there's so much garbage out there. There are bad batteries, and bad lithium ion batteries are dangerous. They can catch fire, they can explode, and those fires are hard to deal with. So good brands like Anker.
Or they just don't work.
Yeah, Anker is one of our favorites. They make a lot of really great battery and like charging accessories.
I had like two-ish questions for Valentina, and I'll blast through them really quick. One, are there any like big inventory concerns this year?
Not that I have heard of. You know, I haven't heard of anything like we did kind of either last year or even the year before, where like stock was like a super big issue. And also this kind of, I think this whole thing started with like early Black Friday stuff, like super early, even going into October, when the inventory issues were a thing and people wanted to push the kind of shopping forward so that people could get their gifts on time. I still think that is a good tactic. Like, if you know what you want and you see it go on sale for a price that you're willing to pay, buy early, you know, check often, buy early if you can. But I have not heard of any like significant supply issues, like supply chain issues. So hopefully that isn't as much of a concern this year as it has been in the past.
My last thing is just two general tips. One is that like I find digital subscription type gifts such great last minute gifts. When like you've forgotten someone on your list, oh my Lord, buy them like a subscription to something, or like a gift cards are always great.
Or
like,
any digital type of gift, like an ebook or a movie or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Devendra sent me a digital gift before. I knew that was a last
minute
gift.
I sent you one. Because I wanted you to watch something and you never actually did watch it.
I
know, so we will.
I ended up watching it for free, unfortunately. And then the other general tip is just for life. Pay attention to when your packages are arriving, mm-hmm. because my building has been the victim of package theft recently.
What's great for that? I'm not shilling for this app, but the Shop app, it's just called Shop. It does a great job.
Yes.
You could tie your Amazon account to it, and also like will track other things that you put into it. Like you can put in your email so it can track like you know, things you're getting. That is a good way, because I also always have a lot of packages coming in. So it's a good thing to keep you alert of like when a package is delayed or when it's been delivered or something. So keep track of
I can be
stuff.
Guilty mm-hmm. of leaving packages to wait in the mail room or whatever for too long.
You can?
I tend to be, shut it, Devendra. But then like, you know, now I'm like, no, if you're like me and you tend to be a bit tardy with picking up packages, just don't this holiday season, because it's like package theft is at an all-time mm-hmm, high. Mm-hmm, everyone's, mm-hmm. you know.
In some buildings, there may not be much room to handle boxes and stuff. And maybe
and also,
it's really unfair to the people in your building to just leave junk there for months.
I was also going to shout out that also be kind to the postal workers and people handling packages season. It's an influx of them. So just be understanding that maybe you're impatient for your package, but they're dealing with a lot of traffic
absolutely.
Right now. So that'll be
I had a couple nice quick tips that I like to bring up every time when we're talking about gifts. Be aware of privacy concerns. Not everybody may want an Alexa. Not everybody may want a device with a microphone. So if you have friends who are concerned about those things, in general, like maybe don't gift some of those things if you are not comfortable with it or if they're not comfortable with it. Also,
an Echo speaker.
Echo speaker. Okay. Be aware of the ecosystems your friends are using. Sending them Google stuff when they're all on iOS may not always be the best. Like, try it's unfortunate, like this is the state we're in, but if you know people and you're buying gifts for people in your life, like you probably know what kind of phone they have or what they use with their TV or something like that. So try to fit things into their ecosystems to make their lives a little more easy, you know, a little less annoying and having to juggle separate apps and whatnot. We've got some questions from people in the chat that I want to bring up real quick. Jonathan Tran asked early on, what are some good gifts for his dad in his 70s who's a techie and loves karaoke?
Cher, Here's the thing.
I, as a karaoke expert / aficionado / whatever you want to call it, I don't believe that you can get a real like at-home karaoke system that will replicate that experience of singing for other people, right? It depends on what you enjoy karaoke for. And if you're the sort of person that wants to have it at home, you're probably like enjoying the solo setup. So you like maybe more the sound of your voice. In that case, what you really are looking for is a good like recording setup so that you can play it back afterwards. That's what I do as an aspiring singer. It's like, oh, I want a good mic, a good like sound booth type of situation, good headphones to play stuff back on. But if you're looking for that, like, I'm going to get a bunch of people in a room and sing like loudly and crazy, that's hard to replicate. I do have a friend who has a great karaoke system at home, and we go hang out at her place all the time.
That's fun.
Now.
I mean, it's expensive, and I feel like that tech has not really advanced much. Like you would think, because hey, we've got smart devices, we've got all sorts of things. There is the Sing app, right, which is a thing that exists, and it works on Apple TV, and that is kind of the way. There are some games
and
around
Google TV,
there are some games around that too, but those don't work very well because there's a bit of a delay. It's not the sort of like instant response of you singing into something. And you, even if you have a home theater system, you can't just like plug your voice into your home theater because it's a whole
finding
thing.
Finding the tracks is another challenge.
The tracks are annoying, but also home theater speakers are not meant for broadcasting voices from microphones. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, it is a whole thing.
Right.
So you still need a separate system for that. Like, that's why it's annoying. And just, you know, go to a karaoke place.
So it looks like Jonathan Tran has settled on an idea. Jonathan Tran is saying in the chat right now that maybe I should get him a disco ball. I think that's a great idea. It's fun. It adds to the atmosphere. I know some karaoke rooms in Asia have things like tambourines and like little props that you can like just toss around. Some of their systems have built-in woo noises, like woo, or a ranking system. That's also fun. Those are some ideas for Jonathan. I know there's another question. CF542 asks, I'd like to get a Pixel Watch because I'm a tech junkie, but I will not pay anywhere near full retail. Are there any good deals on this? Valentina, I feel like that's a question for you. Are there good deals on the Pixel Watch and where?
So far, I have not seen
any. It's so new.
Yeah, it's so new that I haven't seen anything recently. But I think we have a story on the site that goes over that just went up this morning about some Google deals that went live today. So check there to see if there's any good discounts on the Pixel Watch. I'm just opening it up now to see if there actually is any. But yeah, it's so new. I would make sure that you set your expectations properly. Like I wouldn't expect something as new as the Pixel Watch to be, you know, I don't know, half off or more than half off or something. So yeah, especially with newer products, expect the discounts to be on the lower side, but it's still probably one of the first discounts you're going to see on a new product like that, you know?
And Mark rightly points out that, yeah, deals on the Pixel Watch happened. That's what Valentina was talking about, how there were some Google deals that went up today. So yeah, definitely check in Gadget.com. We have the information there. But I also wouldn't be surprised if not only Google's own store, but carriers themselves might have deals come Black Friday as well.
For sure. I see another question from Jenny Gaming in the chat too, asking, when are the new MacBook Pros going to be released? And honestly, the release cycles are some things you should probably be thinking about in terms of gifts and stuff. We have no clue. Like right now we are sitting and waiting, but Apple did just have, like, they had their normal events. And I do feel like the rumors are pointing to maybe early next year for MacBook Pro, like maybe post CES, early spring type of deals. The machines out there right now, like I still think the M1, what, the Pro and the Max, whatever those chips, I'm losing track of the chip names, but those are still really good machines. And, you know, the M2 chips that are out there, the M2 computers are still pretty powerful. Like that MacBook Air M2 is still plenty good. So if you want a MacBook Pro with the newer chips, you'll have to wait just a bit.
I think that's all the questions we're going to address on the audio episode. I want to quickly shout out a tidbit that I heard from Google yesterday at its holiday event, that it turns out apparently people are generally shopping for about only like 7 people on their list. And like when you said that you want to, you know, get the vendor, you said you should get to know your people that you're buying for, get to know their like systems and their ecosystems a bit better. So when Google told me this statistic, I was like, what? 7 people only?
Maybe really? You're buying apparently, too many gifts, Sterling.
Yeah. I'm buying too many gifts. I gotta stop. And then they were like, oh yeah, the next tier up is 20. Like a lot of people also buy. I was like, wait, only? I was like, wait, I need to like maybe whittle down this
scale
list
it back
of mine.
You've got too many
I need to not
hangers on that need gifts from you.
This is why I don't have money. I'm busy shopping for too many people. This is a problem.
It's definitely a problem.
But yeah, for the 7 to 20 people on your list, I hope we've been able to help you figure it out. Also, make sure you're one of them. Make sure you're on your list.
Yeah, buy your treat yourself. Valentina, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you on the internet these days?
Well, I do have a Twitter, but I have not logged into Twitter for
you're
a little
quiet
bit
quitting
of time.
Twitter.
Yes, I'm quiet quitting Twitter. But on Twitter, I am at Valentina Lucia if you'd like to find me there. Otherwise, I mean, you can follow Engadget and Gadget Deals on Twitter. Make sure that you go back to the Engadget homepage to see all of our deals coverage for Black Friday. We're going to be covering it in earnest. You know, we already are, you know, with all of the early deals. But we will have full coverage for Black Friday if you're interested in tech deals that you can get then, as well as Cyber Monday too. And yeah, follow Engadget Deals on Twitter and also sign up for our newsletter if you want to receive that that information directly to your inbox. So
cool. Thank you very much. Let's move on to some other news. There's been a big rocket launch. Finally, NASA's Artemis 1, the rocket that will basically help NASA test their new rocket system, the SLS system, for a future manned moon mission. This is not a manned moon mission, but this is going to be currently, I believe it's in an elliptical orbit around Earth. Eventually, it's going to head to the moon. It's going to collect a lot of data that's going to help all of NASA's future missions, especially the Artemis 2, which is going to be the manned moon mission. Do you have feelings about this, Sherlyn? Like, this has been delayed for
a
while.
Space is cool. That's my only thought. Wow. Like, I mean, yes, a lot of this stuff takes time. A lot of this stuff always has delays because they launch test flights and then there's no, they rejigger stuff and they go back out again. Like, it's, yeah, of course there's a delay. I get it. But I mean, this is finally it happened. I don't pay attention to
you
space.
Don't pay attention
news,
to space. I wish Sherlyn did pay attention to space because space is cool. Why? Everybody,
I think so too.
We've got a piece from Marielle Moon and Engadget that kind of puts this in context to you. NASA's successful Artemis 1 rocket launch brings humanity closer to a lunar landing. So I'd suggest go check that out. Get some context. And this is something we've been waiting for a while. It's very exciting for NASA to be, you know, launching their space launch system. That's what SLS stands for. It's their most powerful rocket yet. Who knows what this could all lead to? I feel like, especially when it comes to moon missions, we've just basically been in a standstill for decades. So it's nice to see some sort of movement. I don't know what's going to happen beyond this. Speaking of space stuff, you care about space, Sherlyn, because you care about Apple's satellite texting feature, right? The SOS satellite.
Yeah, so that's the thing about space I care about. Now, this week, or actually last week on Friday, I took a demo with Apple to see the emergency satellite.
Did they drop you in the middle of nowhere? Just like here.
So emergency text, emergency SOS via satellite. And yes, no, we actually tested it in Prospect Park, but not that like we were, you know, suddenly out of service because we're in Manhattan or we're in New York. There's no way. But, you know, we use special demo phones on which the company had disabled like cellular and stuff. And we tested, like I actually chatted, like I came up with a scenario, and this is what you won't see in my articles, right? The real behind the scenes stuff. I, you know, you go through this, the actual emergency SOS like interface, you have to answer a survey. And so they're like, okay, what's going on? What's your trouble? What's your emergency, right? Like 911, what's your emergency? And this one, they offer you multiple choice questions. So I was like, okay, I'll pick the one that it looks like nobody would pick. So I picked the one where it's like a crime or whatever is going on. And then they're like, okay, what's the situation? And then of all the choices there were, I picked active shooting or something. And then they're like, how many people are in danger? Or like, describe your location. I was like, we're in a forest. And so basically I came up with this like really weird scenario where like three people were being hunted by like a crazy person with a rifle or something. I don't know. I think I've been watching too much Criminal Minds. But basically, the news, though, is that now this week, Apple launched a new demo mode for everyone on an iPhone 14. You can go into settings, emergency SOS, and then check out a demo of the emergency text via satellite feature. Now, instead of communicating with a real agent at a relay center or emergency response center, you'll be given like canned responses through a server. And Apple will route the demo mode text to somewhere else. But the idea is that like it's like a fire drill, right? Like instead of like in case you're ever somewhere in the wilderness, you're lost and you want to get in touch with like emergency services via satellite, you need to know what the experience is going to be like. So you're not like, I mean, you don't want to be seasoned at it, but you also don't want to be like tripping over yourself, not knowing what to do, because there are a lot of things that might be confusing. For example, the very first step to even access this feature is call 911. And if you're lost in the woods, you're like, I want to use emergency whatever text now. Your first instinct might be to go to text. Your first instinct might be to go to the emergency app. But there's no such thing. You have to try to dial 911 first.
That is a weird usable thing. Yeah.
I agree. It's like maybe there should be a more direct way to find this feature. But I think Apple wants people to think that your first step is always to dial 911.
That's true. Okay.
At least in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right. So they want you to go to 911 first, and only when that fails, they will show you the option.
How did they demo this for you? Did they disable 911 on some of these phones? Like,
so we were being routed to a relay center that knew to expect our messages.
Wow, that is a hard demo to set up. Apple has to deal with this 911 center.
It is. Apple has the power, right, to flex that I think they had their own relay center set up as well in some places where maybe they know there's not like a close us, like for example, you also need to be able to like be in within reach of a emergency like response system that accepts text messages. That's the key too, because these are text messages. So the other thing you also get used to by testing out demo mode is not only like how long it takes to send a text message over a satellite, but also how to position your phone, point your phone to find and connect to a passing satellite overhead. And you're actually connecting to real satellites with this demo. So you don't want to do it too much because you're going to overload the system, but it will show you how long text takes to send and also kind of train you as to how to be concise and not to use too many words while you're texting. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Prospect Park's not where I expect to need help, but
I mean, I've gotten lost in Prospect Park many, many times, but yeah, you probably don't need satellite help to get out there. It's more like which exit am I getting out at? What's the closest subway? I don't know. That's really cool. I'm glad you got to test that, Sherlyn. So what was that, like, what were the delays when you were doing texting? Like, how long did it take for messages to send and stuff?
Yeah, it's funny because you would send, like, a message and as it's sending, like, you know, you imagine like a progress bar, right? So imagine as it's sending, you will lose the satellite connection because the satellite's traveling overhead really quickly. So you might lose it. So then you need to turn around again and find another satellite. So if you're in that situation, it can take a few minutes.
Oh, wow. Because you have to keep holding it up to... Wow.
Exactly. Mm. To maintain that connection. And then things like dense foliage can get in the way, things like buildings. So this isn't something you want to test in the middle of a city. And also if you're in the middle of a city, you're not going to need satellite help.
That's cool.
So This is, yeah, it does take a while to send.
And this is also different than the thing T-Mobile announced, because they made a big deal with their sort of satellite thing, because I believe theirs goes through the cell towers to connect to satellites rather than the phone directly pinging a satellite. So it's a whole thing. We are really in interesting new territory here for our phones, but I think it's good to have connectivity, because I feel like, especially out here in Georgia, like when I'm driving on a country road and I lose all connectivity, I'm like,
yep.
Ha. This feels weird in 2022 to be stuck nowhere. And then I think about Blair Witch, and I think about, I don't know, everything else, every horror movie and things that have happened in Georgia. So, you know, good features to have. I'm glad we're doing this. Also, in mobile news, Sherlyn, I knew you were so excited. You couldn't stop being excited and clapping for Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 chip.
Yeah. Yeah, so excited, y'all. So hyped.
Hardware, so accelerated, ray tracing. Here's the thing. In your phone.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's cool.
I mean, I think that's really cool. Honestly, don't get me wrong. I think that particular
will never be actually
be
used, but
cool.
Yes, cool.
Who knows what's going to... Here's the thing. Qualcomm, I think, has every right to be nervous right now that it's going to lose market share, that it's going to lose relevance, because every company's making their own damn chip. Like, you've got Google's Tensor, Apple's A-Series, Bionics, you've got Microsoft on, let's say, Surface tablets. Yes, Microsoft's teaming up with Qualcomm on it, but I don't know, I feel like it's...
They're definitely, like, they're looking at what everyone else is doing, and like, doesn't seem that hard.
We had Xiaomi, right. Samsung has Exynos, and Exynos is trying to close the delta on the Snapdragon. So, like, you've got every company is really trying to make their own chips, SoCs. So, with Qualcomm's announcement this week of the new Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, it used to be we would pay a lot of attention because these are the ones that power all the phones, right? LG, HTC, OnePlus. And right now, honestly, it feels like the only phones of note that the Snapdragon series powers are the Samsung flagships, they're still using them, OnePlus phones. But then you think about everything else that used to use a Snapdragon chip, they're all gone now. Like LG's gone, HTC's gone, Google uses its own Tensor. There's not a lot.
I mean, because variants of those chips are ending up in VR headsets and things like that. So I forget what is powering the Meta Quest Pro. But
so
like
they have
like
specific chips for VR too. They have their XR platform. They have the Snapdragon, you know. When it comes to the mobile premium line, the Snapdragon 8 series, that's always been like for the most powerful flagship phones. And now it's like, all right, we'll see. But in case you care, the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 will enable support for things like 5G SIMs, Wi-Fi 7, and 200 megapixel cameras. And this is what makes me feel like Qualcomm is kind of running out of ideas. It's like, you know, I mean, obviously there's like AI stuff in there too.
Yeah, better picture stuff.
Right. I don't know. Maybe because they still have to work with manufacturers to enable some of these features. That's where the trip is. That's where the break in you know, being able to enable a certain type of technology versus users actually being able to test this out. That's Qualcomm's challenge. And then until they pivot to becoming a phone maker themselves, which
it seems more likely a company will be like, huh. Nice chips you got there, Qualcomm. It's a shame this market is kind of falling apart. Let's just help you out there. Qualcomm's market cap is $136 billion. And let's just say some companies have a lot of money. So I don't know.
And in the chat, Mark Dell said, will Sherlyn get ray tracing on her solitaire game? I mean, you know what? Ray tracing on solitaire is dope. I will look forward to it. And then also... right, CF542 Riley points out how useful is ray tracing on a 6-inch screen.
You can make some scenes look really good, but yeah, that is going to kill a battery. That's going to do all sorts of stuff. I'd imagine, like, I'm surprised more films aren't doing like straight up really heavy duty AI stuff on video chats. You know, like when you're actually chatting with people. I know there's a lot of work behind the scenes on Google phones, you know, and even the iPhone, but. There seems like so much more, especially when like you look at the AR filters on like Snapchat and TikTok too. It's like there is some of that in iMessage, but not quite. It feels like there is a gap where we're trying to reach. So anyway, new Qualcomm chips. These are going to be new high powered things. Ray tracing in phone apps and phone games. Nobody cares. We've got another story here that's kind of interesting. The island nation, the Pacific island nation of Tuvalu, which is between Australia and Hawaii. It only houses like 12,000 people, but it's mostly well known for owning the .tv domain. So Tuvalu makes money every time you see a .tv domain.
Nice.
They announced that they are turning to the metaverse to preserve their culture. So I'm reading here a statement from Simon Kofe, or Kofe, the country's foreign minister. He says, as our land disappears, we have no choice but to become the world's first digital nation. Our land, our ocean, our culture are the most precious assets of our people. And to keep them safe from harm, no matter what happens in the physical world, we'll move them to the cloud. End quote. And this is just a really, I think Tuvalu is known for like making big statements too. I think it was either him or somebody else, you know, did a press conference while standing knee deep in water too, to kind of represent what is going to happen to this country. We expect Tuvalu to be completely underwater by the end of the 21st century at the current rate. So unless we do something, and certain rates of climate change are already locked in, like we can't stop, I believe, 1.5 Celsius from pre-industrial eras to kind of hit, like we are definitely barreling towards a messy and dangerous climate future. It's going to affect a lot of countries, and some will just not exist anymore, like Tuvalu. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, Sherlyn, but it's a really interesting story that puts a lot of this in perspective, I think.
I think there's something like art-like about this. There's something about what they're trying to do that is, you know, beautiful in itself, but it's also deeply depressing. However, speaking of the metaverse, Meta, the company that makes Portal displays that
nobody
remembers,
the Portal
paid a lot of celebrities to do ads
yeah.
for. Yep. Also, we hate it. I mean, the whole privacy issue was just always so thorny. Anyway, Meta said it won't make Portal video conference tablets anymore. And here's the thing. The only reason that we mentioned this is because we always shit on Google for the Google graveyard and getting rid of things. I just wanted to make sure we were being fair and calling out when other companies.
I do it all the time. Like when Amazon does really terrible products that we talk about, too. I do remember being in one of the first briefings for this because Facebook, they were still Facebook at the time, were so excited. They spent years working on like their first actual consumer gadget device. And I remember talking to Facebook people being like, are you sure you want to be releasing like video conferencing cameras? Like, you know, people have some privacy concerns, you know, like about Facebook and about you guys. And the response from the PR person was like, oh yeah, really? They have privacy concerns? I don't know. And it was very flippant in a way that was like, oh man, you guys are screwed. You are so blind to the way people see you. And this was before Mark Zuckerberg basically tanked the company by going after the metaverse. So, you know, sometimes you take briefings that, you know, like are dead on arrival products, you know, like, oh, this is, I'm sure a lot of people spent many years working on this, but nothing is going to happen here. I believe those things actually did sell decently well. They were like vaguely popular,
yeah.
And they had some cool features in terms of the way they focused on the video. Like if you walked around the room, it could follow you and things like that. Google ended up doing a lot of that in their, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, on stage.
I'm telling you, between in the smart home wars, right? You look at, especially on the non-Apple side, you look at like Amazon and Google dominating the market. Meta only had this one device, Portal, and it's not doing that great. It really quickly got taken over by Google and Amazon. Amazon, don't forget, has the Echo Show tablets too. So I think when it comes to smart displays, Google has the lead, but speakers, Amazon has.
I'd love to have actual numbers to compare like the Echo Show versus Google's devices, but also like we were really impressed too. What was the one? Was it Amazon that had the one with the speaker that was removable, or was that Google? That was Google, I believe.
Nope, that's Google, but that's not announced yet. This is a Pixel tablet that's coming out next year.
With the speaker like attachment, which is kind of cool.
It's a speaker base, and it's basically a tablet.
I'm just really surprised Apple's not doing much more, because I know a lot of people have old iPads and things like that that they use for all sorts of things. Like, stick an iPad on like a nice HomePod base or something. There are some things that Apple doesn't do that's very very confusing to me. I don't know. Okay, let's move on from this. RIP Portal video conferencing tablets. We will never talk about you again. I want to do a quick update on FTX, the cryptocurrency exchange that has basically imploded since we last talked about them. They have filed for bankruptcy. The CEO and founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, has left the country, just escaped. Like, this whole thing following this has been kind of like a very dramatic thing. I believe he traveled back to the Bahamas, where the company is technically based. They're like, regulators are just like having a field day, like diving into this mess. Like, this, the bankruptcy of this company could affect over 1 million investors, a lot of money, tens of billions of dollars, just evaporated into thin air. Yeah, guys, there are a whole bunch of interviews out there with Sam Bankman-Fried. If you just want to like be very frustrated at somebody who the tech industry heralded as this sort of like young genius of the crypto market, he's gonna make everything very official. He's gonna make this all very clear. He's had big Forbes covers and things like that, and it's so very much the Elizabeth Holmes situation. Because if you read these interviews, which are infuriating, there are some. I believe on Vice, Vox also had one where somebody was DMing him. There is a New York Times one, too, that people really don't like because they didn't really push back on Sam Bankman-Fried very much. But you get the sense that he is a young guy who used to talk up this idea of, effective altruism. And it turns out a lot of that is just bullshit. And he was just like, I just wanted to make money and wanted to try to steal money. And it's all very, very, very sickening. Just very, very gross. He is going to be the subject of a new book by Michael Lewis, the author of The Big Short. So, you know, and apparently Michael Lewis was embedded with him for the past 6 months. So, holy hell, that guy is just like once again in a place to tell a really compelling financial story that I think a lot of people will want to hear more about. I also saw this statement, which I think is pretty hilarious. So FTX now has a new CEO, John Ray III, who also oversaw the Enron bankruptcy. So as Enron fell apart, this guy was also like there to basically, he wasn't like responsible for it, but he was there to like pick up the pieces, basically. He has an amazing quote that was seen in filings. AP reported on it. He says, "Never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of a trustworthy financial information as occurred here. From compromised systems integrity and faulty regulatory oversight abroad to the concentration of control in the hands of a very small group of inexperienced, unsophisticated, and potentially compromised individuals, this situation is unprecedented." So, yeah, folks, like, you're going to be hearing about this for quite a while. Shrilin, any thoughts on the FTX disaster? I don't know if you ever went into crypto or put any money into crypto.
Crypto sucks. Uh-huh. That's all I can tell you. I mean, I think one of the funds that I have, like in my retirement savings or something does invest in Bitcoin or whatever, like one of the more established cryptocurrencies, or Ethereum or Bitcoin, mm-hmm. I forget which one. But yeah, I just think it's such a craze, and it's designed, not designed on purpose, but like it's there to fuel the finance bro, that type of like to the moon sort of, yeah. Like
unfueled speculation, like, unending speculation.
It's,
basically, yeah.
It's wild, yeah. And it's the people who are involved in or like really get caught up in this are, to me, I don't want to bash people too much, but people who are very interested in this sort of stuff are not.
It's an immediate red flag for me. So like the people who are changing their Twitter names to .eth to .f, I'm like, oh, I don't need to follow you anymore. I just don't need to listen to anything you have to say. So anyway, folks,
I barely even wanted to talk about this on our show.
Well, so it's worth talking about because it's a major tech thing that has imploded. But also, this is why we don't talk about crypto very much. We have brought on some great people to talk about the whole idea and NFTs and whatnot. But a lot of crypto, especially these major companies that were so heralded by business reporting and business reporters, who I think should really be taking a close look at like the stuff they're writing about these days. A lot of it is just a smokescreen and an outright grift.
Yeah. It's less, and I want to point out, it's less about the technology. I think there, again, like I've said repeatedly on this show, that I think that there is value to blockchain technology, but I don't think that anyone involved in turning it into cryptocurrency or NFTs and whatever is the right type of person to run something like that, because the people who get into it are often these people who are just so, they have like a high-minded approach for to sure, things that are not grounded for in sure. reality.
Or like there are some people who did make a ton of money on crypto. Like there are a lot of people who invested a couple thousand and became millionaires and ended up becoming those people who are like, oh yeah, clearly this made me millions. This could make you millions. Some of this stuff does work for a very small group of people, but it's not not
and they're either very cunning or very lucky, it's in my opinion, anyway. I don't want to like paint everyone with the same brush. But
That is the whole thing. So anyway, we will be following the story as much as we can because it's just, it's pretty wild. But stay safe out there, folks. Like, if it is like the age old investment advice. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Now let's talk about a bad investment. Let's talk about Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter once again. Let's just quickly update here. There's apparently a lot of back-end things that Elon Musk is turning off as he's trying to save money on server costs. So there are some like elements of two-factor authentication that I believe have been turned off. If you are in Twitter, if you logged in and you don't and you have two-factor and you want to keep tweeting, maybe don't log out for a little bit. 80% of Twitter's contractors were let go with no notice. There are stories about the kind of more brutal rules Elon is implementing with his people to basically say like, hey, if you don't want to be an extreme worker, if you don't want to give us your all, you know, you're out of here. This is the whole thing. It's a continual mess. Meanwhile, I remember a tweet a couple of days ago where Elon was like, you know, engagement is higher than ever, folks. So screw you all. Clearly, Twitter is doing great. And everybody was like, have you ever driven by a car accident? You just kind of want to slow down and like just take a peek, like what a disaster it may be. That is why engagement is up, because we're all making fun of him. And it's just kind of funny to see. So, yeah, we're not going to talk much more about this, but it is nice to have the occasional update. Sherlyn, you want to talk about Amazon Clinic, a virtual healthcare service that they launched recently, too.
Yes. So I don't know if people remember, but I still am interested in telehealth and health services over the internet. And so Amazon, when it released or when it launched Amazon Pharmacy a while ago, I think a lot of us saw that that was coming. A lot of us that have been paying attention to the telehealth industry knew it was coming. But this week, the company launched Amazon Clinic, and that's different altogether, but it is still squarely within telehealth. It is a virtual health service that lets you talk to doctors or medical professionals over text messaging, which is kind of strange. Like, I don't know how I feel about it just yet. So basically what this is you can consult healthcare professionals for some common conditions. It's not for everything. It's not meant to replace a full doctor. But you can, you know, get advice, and even prescriptions without making a video call, without even seeing a professional face-to-face. Okay. I know it seems dodgy, but it connects you with third-party virtual care options. You can choose from Amazon's partner providers, but the purpose has to be one of the following. It has to be acne, hair loss, acid reflux, pink eye, sinusitis, and
UTI. That's not surprising. Yeah.
These are all very like common, easily treatable.
A bunch of startups right now. There's things like Keeps and other companies that do similar things. Right. Like
Keeps is for hair loss. Yeah. UTI is something where, like, you know, you just need the medicine and you don't want to like deal too much with it because some people have some shame attached to that, and that's why maybe the text-based platform makes a bit of sense. Hair loss is another one of those. Acid reflux is again one of those things you just go buy like some Tums. I don't know. Is it
but Tums? You could get like super Tums, like for people who are really
You can get the better one if you're severe enough. So
it's cool. Some prescriptions too, like if you have asthma, high blood pressure, or migraine. So that's useful.
So for me, as much as I am dubious on the whole like text messaging thing, I think it's unclear yet to me whether the text messaging service is, you know, a bot based system where like it's actually generic like template based responses, or if you're talking and texting with
a good question.
That would make a
Keeps and other services. I use Keeps occasionally for a couple of things too, because I was like, I saw my hairline one day, I was like, that's not good. I gotta do something about that, because I am getting older. We're all getting older, folks. It will happen to you too. But I sent Keep some photos, and eventually a doctor was like, looks like a certain amount of, you know, male pattern baldness happening there in the front. So I got some pills because of that. And that was a pretty simple and easy process. So I could see a service like this basically through text to make it super easy. The whole reason this exists is because our healthcare system sucks. Like, it's just awful.
Here's the thing. Another thing that I learned from speaking with a lot of healthcare professionals when I was covering telehealth is that the other thing that doctors and like primary care physicians all want to do is to encourage this system of, your doctor is not there in case of emergency. Your doctor really is someone that is you should consider as part of your holistic approach to your health. So not someone that – think of your body as more as something that you want to check up and maintain all the time instead of only going to seek help for when it breaks, right? So they want to open this door to like a friendly two-way communication that, you know, you're not actually scared of seeing your doctor and instead you think of your primary care person as your friend or your, you know, someone that's like constantly
there. That's how it used to be back in the day when people were living in small communities and you had the like town doctor, right? And like everybody knew them and they saw them.
Yeah. So for me, I have doctors in my family for whom like any small little thing, I just go straight to them. I'm like, oh my God, this is a problem. Like, you know, it's like it's you want to have the ability to not feel afraid about speaking up about symptoms. You want to not minimize symptoms. So I want to clarify also the thing that we said just now. Not sure whether that, you know, you're connected to a real person or not. It does sound like you will be connected to a actual
you have to be professional for prescriptions. Through
Yeah, so through a secure messaging portal, you will first answer a short questionnaire after you pick your preferred provider. Then you'll be connected via the secure messaging
portal. So bot questions
portal
and a real
to
person.
The healthcare professional. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And then a personalized treatment plan. And this part though, it's not covered by insurance. So not yet anyway, right? So you'll still have to pay that flat fee up front, depending on the condition you pick. So acne would be a different price from hair loss, etc. And you will also remain connected to your healthcare professional for up to 2 weeks after the first chat so that you can send like follow-up messages. So for example, if the medication isn't really working out for you or like you're not sure of how you should use it with food or you know, certain times of day, you'll have the option of going back and asking more questions, which I think is how it should be, right? Like it should be an ongoing conversation as opposed to a one-time
visit. I do want to say there are certainly like I'm worried about Amazon getting more deeper into healthcare. We talked about the Amazon pharmacy feature where you're going to be able to like eventually get prescriptions directly through Amazon, I believe. This sucks that we have to rely on like a major company, especially one that is so like notoriously awful as Amazon, to get some basic better healthcare features, because in America, it's impossible to see your doctor immediately. If you're for people outside of the country, like let me just tell you, I tried to book an appointment with my primary care physician recently. They're like, how's January 2023? Like, I'm sick now, buddy. So if you're sick now, okay, what do? You go to
which is more expensive.
Not even emergency clinic. There's urgent care centers. So all of a sudden this new trend of urgent care centers has popped up, which are all over the country. They're everywhere. And
in New York, they're called CityMD.
CityMD, whatever. So
there's a chain
trying to make
CityMD,
them seem more official. But you basically, it's a thing you could walk into and get healthcare.
Immediate
healthcare, amazing. But then they're always the weirdest sort of like corporate run things that they feel like it never feels like they actually care about you. It feels like you're going
into
the doctors suck. It's like you're going into Starbucks and they're just like disgruntled. Like instead of ordering a latte, you're getting like, I think I have the flu. Can you give me some medicine or something?
They just want you in and out. They don't care.
It's not so. Yeah, we've got huge sweeping problems in healthcare in this country. So if you're watching this from outside the country, if you're in Canada or anywhere, you know, with great socialized medicine, this is a horror story. I agree.
So anyway, Amazon Clinic is only available in 32 states at the moment. Amazon Pharmacy is partially covered by insurance, depending on where you are and depending on your, you know, coverage plan. So if you do get medication through Amazon Clinic, it can be covered. The medication itself can be covered through Amazon Pharmacy if your insurance supports it. And that's the way, like, that's the way I got to talk about American healthcare, right? Like, and your insurance covers, if your insurance provider covers it, that sort of thing. You know, in Singapore, it's different.
Let's talk about something more fun and I think it's annoying. I don't know. Nike wants to join the blockchain. I heard you were excited, Sherlyn, about Nike's blockchain product. You were so excited.
So I don't think
as excited as you were for this.
I'm pretty excited, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should talk about the so mm-hmm. what happens is Nike launched a platform community type thing called Dot Swoosh. And it's not so much like it's the way the company sort of marketed it is this is their Web3 approach. But in its own press release, it also says blockchain powered technology, or quote, what many call Web3. But the goal is for them to so-called offer an inclusive, equitable place for athletes, creators, collectors, and consumers to design and own the future of sport. It's very, I think, nebulous what this means. It sounds kind of like they're basically you can sign up with, if you have an invite, you can go sign up and, you know, claim your name. Like for me, it would be like Sherlyn.swoosh.nike.
What is it for? That is my question.
Right. And so initially when they properly launch, I think they'll have drops of like virtual product. And starting in January, so it'll be like virtual shoes or virtual like gear. And then they'll have like specific athletes they team up with to launch some of these collections as well. And then ultimately, maybe, because it's all very experimental right now, maybe they will also go the route of letting you create stuff that you can sell to other people through their platform.
That's never going
to
happen.
We don't know if that's going to happen, because that would require a lot of systems in place. That would require, first of all, a payment processing system that goes two ways. Another is turning this into GeoCities right now?
Yeah, I feel like Nike, the whole point of Nike, like they're talking about this as being an inclusive platform. The whole point, this entire company is built on exclusivity. Like the fact that you got to pay a lot of money to get this one shoe, and you got to wait in line for it, or you got to get the drop on an app. And I'm like, oh, you're just... So yeah, this is a new place to get virtual shoes,
right?
And virtual jerseys.
So I think that's
okay.
Yeah, I think that's sneaker culture in general. I don't think that that's just a problem of Nike. I think absolutely. The whole idea.
But they
have
benefited more than any other company from.
Oh, for sure. I will say that, like, at least in the press release or in the briefing that I got, that like Nike's so-called approach to inclusivity in this is to like reach out to underrepresented communities first when like rolling.
We want you to
out.
Pay $200 for sneakers first.
I mean, yes, but to me, the whole thing of like that, the idea of going first to like people who are not necessarily in your target demographic, generally, like, it's not something I've seen.
It's absolutely their target demographic.
That's pretty cool.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyone with money.
Yeah.
I guess.
Anyone with money, but also communities that have historically like really supported Nike too. Like, so yeah.
Sprinkles in the chat says, I would like to see what Nike does with blockchain. That could be interesting. I mean, I think the idea of blockchain is really there to serve as like a verification tool.
You know what?
For
I'm going to say something controversial, because we've been talking about blockchain and NFTs and crypto for years. I'm tired of making excuses for blockchain. If the technology is so good, freaking use it for something good instead of destroying the planet.
It should be easier. Better by now. Yeah,
if a lot of people are talking about blockchain things where it's like, oh, this is a decentralized, you know, ledger of everything. I'm like, you mean like we could just have a database? Just have nothing wrong with a database. They've worked for years. Yeah. We have built entire
or something, right?
You know, businesses on databases. Anyway, this is me ranting against blockchain NFTs once again. So there's other things. Let's move on to Around Engadget. We've got some big stories going on, or actually one we really want to talk about. James True, the guy who loves action cameras, and he loves GoPro specifically. He reviewed the GoPro. I don't know if this is a review or if this is
a review.
Yeah, it's a hands-on of the GoPro Hero Hero 11 Black Mini. I hate the way GoPro names things. It is a smaller version of the 11 Black, I believe. So it's a small camera.
Yeah.
It's a small action camera. James wrote this up and it looks really cool.
The 11 Black is great. Yeah. The 11 Black, I had a chance to use it during our review of the Apple Watch Ultra. That's all we took with us to shoot that video on the trail. And that was really awesome. The 11 Black Mini is like a smaller version that probably doesn't have all the bells and whistles, but there's no touchscreen, for example. So you can navigate with the small display on the top. But if you're familiar with GoPro, you already know how to use that. It's right back to Hero 4. I mean, the pictures that we got from this Hero 11 Black Mini that James posted on the hands-on, the mini review, I guess. They're calling it a review. They look good. I mean, that landscape picture of a soccer field looks amazing.
Yeah.
So check it out.
Check it out. I mean, also for the people who wear GoPros on their heads with like the head straps, like something like this is actually probably going to be better for you than something with the screen. Seems pretty cool. I wish I bought a GoPro Hero 10 Black, I think last year or the year before. I'm like, we're going to do walks. We're going to go through the forest. I'm going to use it for product reviews or whatnot. Have not done anything with it.
I know.
There's nowhere to go.
That's the thing, is that it's not just about capturing the footage. And I will say GoPro makes capturing the footage easy, but it is actually what you do afterwards with the footage that takes time.
Oh, man, I'm so bad at that too. We do have a bird feeder, so I want to set up a good way to just have it sit there and look at the birdies. So that's my thing. Let's move on to what we're working on. I put up a review. I spent all weekend actually reviewing NVIDIA's RTX 4080, the newer, cheaper, slightly cheaper than the $1599 RTX 4090. This one is an $1199 card. just as powerful with NVIDIA's new architecture. I think it's pretty great, but also I do think everybody should just sit tight and wait to see what the next NVIDIA cards are going to be like, the RTX 4070 and 4060, which have not been announced yet, maybe eventually 4050. The new architecture, the Ada Lovelace architecture that NVIDIA is talking about, does a great job with ray tracing. It is certainly faster in every way. This card is priced the same as the 3080 Ti or Titanium that came out earlier this year, I believe, and it's faster. It's like genuinely faster. I don't think it's an upgrade, but it's certainly like a really, really good video card. I just want more. I want more affordable options out there, and we're not really getting that. So, you know, stay tuned. I did review Intel's Arc GPUs a month or two ago, and those are great low-end options, and it's nice to see like more things happening in the space. But maybe if you can help it, don't go out and buy a $1,200 video card. There's so many other things you could do. I'm also testing out Samsung's Galaxy Arc, the giant 55-inch monitor, which I need to write up at some point. This is the super curved computer monitor that can tilt into portrait mode and show like three different windows all at once. I have a lot of feelings about this because I feel like it is more impressive on paper than it is in practice, but it is a really wild thing to have sitting next to my desk and to play some games on. It's really something. What are you working on, Sherlyn?
I have a product coming in to test that I can't really talk about yet, but suffice to say it's something people are excited about. And we just had a Apple Watch Series 8 versus Watch Ultra versus SE 2022 video come out. So that's what I was working on. I'm also still actively testing the Microsoft Adaptive Mouse. The hang up for me here is that I need to figure out which of the 3D printable little attachments I want to print out. I've been using that little the button to send canned replies to people, right? Like you said, for example, one of the things that you want a macro for is to insert your address, Devendra. And that's such a great one that I have added. And it's such a time saver. Mine is, I agree to the embargo, please send the details as well. And that one has been, honestly, I've been using that one so much. So that testing is ongoing. And, you know, we've got some end of year review, end of year roundups to write. So send me, you know, if y'all have any ideas for the best things in tech this year, or the worst things in tech this year, you send them over to podcast@engadget.com because we might forget things. So you let us know. Yeah, that's it. That's,
I mean, we're all preparing for CES too. So that's a whole thing.
And Thanksgiving.
And Thanksgiving. It's more like my life is dictated by like the work ahead of me, basically. So yes, Thanksgiving. Looking forward to that. And we won't be on next week, folks, and we will remind you all at the end of the show. But yeah, let's move on to our pop culture picks. What you got, Sherlyn?
I saw Black Panther Wakanda Forever last Thursday at a Dolby Theater in New York, the one in Lincoln Center.
I mean, the Dolby Theater there, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was an IMAX too, so it was really cool. I think I'm not a big like go to the theaters to watch a movie kind of person. I don't mind watching at home as much, but this one was really nice.
I mean, you're also a crazy Marvel fan, so yeah, you got to be there for this.
Huge Marvel fan. And exactly. I liked Shang-Chi, but I honestly feel, I think I walked out of that theater and I came away thinking this is like, to me, and I know you have thoughts and objections, but to me, this was like possibly one of the best like MCU movies since Phase 4, mm-hmm. like in since Endgame. Because I thought Shang-Chi was good. I think Shang-Chi maybe moved me even more because of like just my whole representation stuff. But Wakanda Forever, it's moving in a way. It's like, it's obviously they dealt with Chadwick Boseman's death quite respectfully. I think the story made a lot of sense. I felt some representation in the whole Namor story, the water-based sort of myth, speaks to me as a Southeast Asian living in an island, on an island growing up. It felt very like a mix of Indonesian and like Mexican, and like that sort of stuff really like spoke to me in the story. But also, the outfits were amazing. The soundtrack was great. Like, I don't know if it's good or bad that like I'm more into the peripherals of the show than the actual movie. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone.
Yeah,
obviously,
I think that tells you a lot about the movie, to be honest. Like, yeah.
Not sure, man. I will see, because I like it a lot. I thought it was very cohesive. I saw a lot of it felt like it referenced a lot of different things. I felt like I was like, oh, this is this. And yet the story, it was very cohesive. I also felt like as a show that doesn't hammer like home like, or it doesn't beat you over the head with the idea that this is like a feminist story. It was a very empowering story.
A lot of great strong women.
Yeah. It was all exactly. It was very strong women, very powerful women, and not only physically but mentally and emotionally as well. And it's just amazing to watch. You didn't have to hammer home the point for me to feel that you were telling me this through the story. I obviously have my issues with some of the actors. Letitia Wright.
Yeah, yeah. Who ended up being like, a bit of an anti-vaxxer, sure. Which is unfortunate because she's also from my home country. So I'm like, okay, not great.
I really liked her in Black Mirror. Really
she's
liked
great.
Her
she's great
things,
and everything. It's just like, I do think the pandemic kind of revealed things about people that we can't forget now, unfortunately, but whatever. I believe she apologized.
So what were your thoughts?
I think it's it's kind of complicated. Like, I love the first movie. I think it's genuinely great. I think this one is really complicated because it's trying to do so many things. It's a movie about grief, about the passing of Chadwick Boseman, and the movie begins with the passing of T'Challa. It's a movie, another movie about like how colonialism has destroyed or basically has shaped a specific culture too. And that it certainly means a lot to me too, because I don't think we talk about Spain's complete obliteration of Native peoples in the Americas, throughout the Americas, and this movie is a direct response to that. I think it's very smart in what it's trying to do, but it's not, it wasn't as exciting as the first movie to me. It wasn't as fun because it couldn't be, because it's a movie ultimately about grief. I also think the action, like a lot of the action stuff, like the stuff I really go to an MCU movie for, I'm like, it just feels like they didn't have as much time. Yeah. And they basically had to had to rework this movie because of Chadwick Boseman's death. And that's the main thing. And you can kind of feel when a movie wasn't what they intended it to be. That was kind of The Rise of Skywalker as well. I like it. I just feel like a little disappointed in it. If you want to hear more of my thoughts, check me out on the Filmcast because we just reviewed it there.
Yeah, I'll say one word, one thing about that action thing that you mentioned. Yeah, like where that's the one thing I also felt was flat, where like with Shang-Chi is like, oh, so many of the action scenes were just amazing. And I was like, yes. The Wakanda Forever, I don't think this is a spoiler, but there was a car chase scene there. I was like, oh, I wish it was like the first car chase scene. Like, you know, the first movie had an amazing car chase scene. And then this one just, I was like, I'm sick of the car chase scenes by that point.
It seems like the action just didn't really fit anything. Like, I just wasn't super excited. I do think Tenoch Huerta is fantastic, and you know, the dude basically had to do the Daniel Craig thing in Casino Royale where he had to come out of the water in Speedos for every single scene because it's a part of his character.
I adored him, I feel like a lot of people are like okay I can
live with that. I think he is fun. Like, he is fun. He is really good, intimidating when he needs to be, but also very like empathetic.
Yeah.
There are things going around Twitter about a certain bulge cut that people would like to see, which apparently very clearly Disney edited in this movie. So, okay. Ooh. Okay. Let's move on to Weird. My thing is Weird, the Al Yankovic story, which is this is a movie that's on the Roku channel right now. And this is a sort of like parody biopic of Weird Al's life, and I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think you should check it out, Trillin. I don't know if it's like your kind of humor, but music biopics have been kind of just ruined after the movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox movie, which just basically like took every single movie biopic trope and just like ripped it apart. So it's really hard to do a biopic now. I feel like the only successful one was Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping, which was sort of like a parody biopic. That movie is a work of art. I think this one is not as good. You could tell the budget isn't as high, but you got Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al. You've got just completely insane scenarios. You've got a whole plot line around like Madonna's like tempestuous relationship with Weird Al, which never happened in real life, but it's really funny. And I think it's a joy, and also a really interesting movie for the Roku channel, because I don't think people realize, a lot of people don't know what the Roku channel is. And also when you watch this movie, you have to sit through ads, because that is what the Roku channel is. It is an ad experience. It's free movies and free shows, but you got to watch some ads. And I think this is probably the biggest thing Roku channel has done, even though it's a pretty low budget looking movie. Has lots of great guest stars. It is just like a ton of fun. I will say, like, it has a bit of that syndrome. It is based off of an old Funny or Die trailer, which was also like, what if there was a serious Weird Al movie or something? And it's kind of extending that idea. And maybe just sticks around a little too long. Maybe they didn't have enough to like feel it, really fill almost 2 hours. But I think it's a ton of fun. You should check it out. Weirdly, you cannot watch it. Weirdly, you can't watch it on Apple TV because there's no Roku app on Apple TV yet. But if you have Roku devices, or you can just watch on your phone or on the web too, I believe. Roku channel is all over the place and you can check it out. It's worth a watch. This is Weird at the Al Yankovic Story.
Well, that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me the scenes they cut from Wakanda Forever, I'm Shirley Lowe on Twitter.
Email us.
Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. We won't be having an episode next week, nor will we be live streaming on YouTube next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday here in the US. So, yeah, take a break. Listen to an old episode.
Another thing, we've heard from some folks that you've been experiencing some weirdness with our RSS feed. Just wanted to let you know about some things happening in the background. We recently moved the podcast over to a new platform, which should be better for our company to take a look at like traffic and analytics and things like that. Sorry if you've either had fake downloads, like re-downloads of episodes or anything. Also, if you're listening to this and like your feed is just not updating or something, unsubscribe and resubscribe. That tends to fix things with RSS. Hopefully, yeah, we won't have any more feed issues like this. But yeah, just letting you all know, there's some weirdness out there.
Thanks for your patience.
There are things going around Twitter about a certain bulge cut.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can tell you, yes. I watched it in IMAX, Devendra, I know.